From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for being there and being with us all week long. We have a big show coming your way. Senator Bill Cassidy of Louisiana is going to be joining us up for re-election. Of course, big, beautiful bill front and center. Trade deals left and right. First one has come in. What could be next? Don't forget to get the podcast, BrianKilmeadeShow.com. Our podcast is huge. Be part of the magic, especially if you can't listen live. Fox News app is the way to go. We have standing by Matthew Continenti, Director of Domestic Policy, and Neil Chair at the American Enterprise Institute, AEI, and columnist and commentary and founding editor of the Washington Free Beacon. A lot going on today. In fact, on the docket, Starlink is going to be in action today. We know that. SpaceX, Falcon 9 rocket, will launch another batch of 26 Starlink satellites up there. And Pope Leo this morning opened up with a mass, and he's from Chicago. Went to Villanova, big three.
Number three.
You know, I met with pharmaceutical companies yesterday and had a very frank discussion with them about ways to limit TV commercials. When you advertise a pharmaceutical product, it's the government that is most likely going to pay for that product.
Isn't that interesting? MAHA movement goes from program to power as RFK's team adds Casey Means and talks about how America is about to get healthy again. But they got a plan to do it as these real life friends take take effect, hopefully positively in your life.
Number two.
With this deal, the UK joins the United States in affirming that reciprocity and fairness is an essential and vital principle of international trade.
Yep, one is done. Trump brings home a trade deal with UK as a massive meeting with China looms, and there's some movement on this. It's going to be taking place in Switzerland. We look at the numbers, the deals, and the markets.
Number one.
I bet they like you. They miss you.
Yeah. I miss being here.
Yeah.
I'm actually interviewing for a job as a cameraman.
Now he's calling for investigations and claiming the pardons are void and vacant.
Oh, he's vacant.
Why is he so fixated on you and blaming you for everything?
I beat him.
Well, there you go. The Biden rehab tour causing a relapse. BBC and The View appearances have one thing in common. Joe can't communicate and wrestles with reality. And in the end, his legacy and his party will pay the price. Matthew Continenti joins us now. Matthew, what do you think the last 2 days of interviews have done for the Democrats and Joe Biden?
Not much, Brian. Thank you for having me. It's been a lesson in why the Democrats lost so spectacularly in 2024. To have Joe Biden on these big public stages, first with the BBC, then yesterday with The View, was a reminder of just how bad a president he was. He will not accept responsibility for the border. He did not mention inflation at all. And he's avoided all of the foreign policy issues that caused this explosion, among other things, of anti-Semitism in the United States. It's something to watch. These Democrats self-immolate.
Right. And if you are a Democrat and you want to see your party turn the page, which every party does after their candidate loses, this is a nightmare for you. But the other thing, I remember Bob Dole when he lost to Clinton, he got blown out. He goes on David Letterman. It's charming. And people thought, wow, I wish we saw more of that personality. I remember John McCain. Back to work in the Senate, okay? It's over. Back to work. I understand it. And, you know, he went out of his way not to criticize President Obama and famously invited him to speak at his funeral. And then when you have, for example, you have George W. Bush, don't hear a word from him after. He's out there criticizing, still in denial. The one thing I thought was interesting, they said, what would you have done? He goes, I would have beat him because last time I got 7 million more votes than he got winning this time. Shouldn't there be some clarification there?
Yeah, you would think there'd be a whole lot of clarification on some of the things that Biden said. You know, he's not acting like earlier presidents. I mean, even President Trump, after he left the White House in 2021, he really didn't come back on the public stage until CPAC in that spring. And then it was his broader vision for the country, part of his eventual comeback. Biden is on the stage very early. Remember, a couple of weeks ago, he gave that paid speech in Chicago. He has spoken to students from one of his advisors at Harvard. Now he gives these two interviews. The question is why? And I think I'm very sympathetic to the theory of the journalist Mark Halperin, who says maybe Biden Inc. is in danger of running out of cash. And so they need the big guy to be out there in public in order to show that the family is still relevant.
Yeah, here he is. Cut 13.
Biden Inc. has collapsed. All those Biden grandkids had a lavish lifestyle, which they very much liked. Hunter made hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars. Joe, as a former president, is not in a position to get the same kind of paid speeches, corporate boards, book deal. Biden Inc. needs a source of revenue. And Hunter does, even though he was pardoned and he's not going to prison, Hunter does not have great earning capacity.
So that was just not an apolitical look. He says he's got a memoir done. Somebody said that he's got a book deal, him and Jill, for $30 million. That's just got to be a payoff, because no one's going to buy that book, just like no one's going to finance that library if he indeed wants one.
Right, right. And, you know, we also learned a couple months ago from the New York Times that Hunter Biden's artwork suddenly has collapsed in price and isn't selling, right? So you need to have other revenue streams. Biden mentioned the book in the interview with The View. He expressed kind of a surprise and a frustration that apparently his publisher wants it done in a year to get it out probably sometime in the fall of 2026. But of course, you know, the question is, you know, who's going to write it? The auto pen, right? I mean, even the story we get from the Biden family is not going to reflect reality. And I think that's another reason he may be out there. He's trying to kind of pre-butt this deluge of books that is just starting to come out, showing how his cognitive abilities declined dramatically over the course of his presidency.
I mean, you got four books now that say that. He said, well, no one served with us that wrote it. Yeah, right. But they're the sources of the books, including your best friend, Ron Klain. So I want to talk about another thing. We know this. We have one deal done with the UK, and it's interesting. It's going to help the ag group, and they have some protections for Britain when it comes to Rolls Royces and their cars. I'll get into details on that. But what's also interesting is what happened over the last 24 hours. It looks as though, according to Bloomberg and now the president's Truth Social account, he's going into sending the Treasury Secretary and his trade leader. He's going to go tell them they could come off the 145% tariff level if, of course, both want to do that. He says maybe 80 sounds like something. And evidently, Bloomberg has 65% tariff level in terms of maybe loosening up some rare earth that we need. Your thoughts about his approach to these meetings in Switzerland?
Well, it's classic Trump approach. He's talking what he would like to see, 80%. But he also said in that Truth Post, Brian, that it's up to Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, who will be making the negotiations. And I think the key is reciprocity. Because it's clear we're getting these reports. The Chinese are hurting just as much, if probably a lot more than the United States is from the trade war. Remember, their economy is export dependent. Ours is not. Ours is not dependent on imports. So we have more leverage over them. What I'm looking at is these reports also that the Chinese actually want us to lift some of our export controls on these high-tech AI-related semiconductor chips. I don't know if the Trump administration is going to be willing to go there.
I don't think so.
This early. And so we'll see what comes out of these discussions. But I do have confidence that Secretary Bessent, the Trump team, they're not going to be intimidated by China in the same way, say, as Biden's national security advisor Jake Sullivan was when they first met with the Chinese back in 2021.
Remember, they got blistered in Alaska. They basically got yelled at, which is so humiliating for the country. That's how I felt at the time. So I love what you did. You took a step back after the president's commencement address in Alabama, and you thought about his career and what he said. And you wrote a column called The Wisdom of Donald Trump. And one day when he's out of the political fray, and it's going to be 3 years, and people take a deep breath, and whoever becomes president, whatever party's in power is in power, people realize what an extraordinary career this guy's had. And his visualization and manifestation has been something that you can really learn from. What did you get from his speech, and what do you think those Alabama students got that day?
Well, they loved it. Watching the speech, you could tell that the audience was just so excited to have President Trump there. And President Trump loved it, too, as he remarked several times after the commencement. So that's what drew my attention to the speech, Brian. And what I was shocked was, maybe I shouldn't have been surprised, the media completely missed the story. They were focusing on, of course, the more political heavy messages in Trump's commencement. And they were there, and that's how Donald Trump communicates. What they left out was these 10 pieces of advice that Donald Trump gave the graduates based on his own life and career. Things like think positive, think big, start out strong when you're young because success can come early, never, never give up, don't lose your momentum. I found these lessons very valuable, one, but two, very revealing of how Donald Trump has lived his life. He doesn't slow down, he doesn't stop. And he used examples and explanations drawn from people he had encountered, famous players like Gary Player or famous builders like William Levitt of the Levittowns. He mentioned his father, which is always fascinating. He talks about Fred Trump. And so what you got a picture of from this commencement is actually how Donald Trump thinks about himself. And I, for one, am interested in that. And I think about 50% of the country is, if not more. But our media is completely checked out. All they want to do is criticize, attack, and put the worst face of Donald Trump forward.
I mean, a couple of things. He also said, don't be a victim. Yeah, things are going to go wrong. Don't be a victim. It's a mindset, too. He brought up the Commodore Hotel, his first successful story. And I remember him, Eric, telling a story about him being 24 years old. And they say, Eric, take over this project. And he... And, you know, he'd been working every summer, taking over the project. And what he did is basically give him autonomy to figure it out, start dealing with the unions, dealing with builders, dealing with problems. And then he goes, I'll be here to help you out. And he says, I learned by doing, but by my dad giving me the confidence to do it, I realized that's what his dad did to him, threw him into the fray. It builds up confidence.
Well, think about his cabinet, right? I mean, this Trump 2 team is much younger than Trump won. And you consider that his vice president's 40 years old, right? You had his secretary.
Look at his press
state,
secretary, 27.
His press secretary, Carolyn Leavitt, still in her 20s. Of course, Stephen Miller, one of the key aides. He's also in his 40s, early 40s, if not late 30s. Pete Hegseth, much younger than your normal defense secretary. So that same ethic that he talked about at the University of Alabama about start out young, get your success done early, that's visible in this administration. I think it's one reason why this administration is more effective in the first 100 days, say, than even the successful first term.
And you also brought up, too, and contrasted with Barack Obama. Obama says progress is achieved through bottom-up community action within institution. For Trump, progress is the result of renegade individuals willing to break things. And, man, is Trump willing to break things? Yes. And then he goes back and fixes it. You know, he got the world's attention, and little by little, he's going to put it back together. And people are nervous, and there's going to be some shelves that are bare, and the ports are going to be not as busy as they should be. But in the end, if these deals start rebalancing trade in America and set a new foundation. That's why I think, Matt, the worst thing for this president is 100 days. There's nothing about the president's agenda that's going to yield any results in 100 days. So, of course, the polls are going to be underwater.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you need a long framework to judge the success. You know, what's fascinating about that be an outsider is what Trump told these students. That's usually not what you hear from commencement speakers, right? He was saying, be an outsider, take risks, don't work within the system. And you can see how it's helped him in his life, right? I mean, he was the Trump coming from the outer boroughs into Manhattan when he got his start. He was an outsider in Manhattan society. Then he had his second successful career in entertainment, right? With The Apprentice. Here is Donald Trump coming from the business world, an outsider to entertainment. He becomes a big television star. And then, of course, he is the ultimate political outsider, starting out in 2015, being laughed off as a potential nominee for the Republican Party, and then not only winning the Republican nomination three times in a row, but also having this stunning comeback, changing the party, changing the conservative movement, changing the world. So, yeah, that piece of advice there, I think, is very deeply embedded in the personality of President Trump.
And just for the record, I'll never forget when he decided to run is in 2015 and he's in and they asked Melania, he goes, oh, well, if he's going to run, he's going to win. And I'm like, that's interesting. That's nice to be supportive. But it's almost as if she goes, no, that's what he does. He's going to win. And I'm not saying he has bankruptcies and he's got failures. The USFL wasn't a positive. He sued the league to take on the NFL, wins the court case, but only gets a dollar. He doesn't want to bring that up. So it doesn't matter. I mean, if you look at his background, you could see it's not a straight line. And he also cites Theodore Roosevelt, Douglas MacArthur, George Patton, Amelia Earhart, Annie Oakley, and Muhammad Ali as personalities to really build off of. And it's interesting. He just gets up every day. It's like, even when he was soldiering through all those court cases, I asked him on the plane when the cases were at their zenith and they were still waiting for his first verdict, how are you getting through it? He goes, what choice do I have? I'm like, well, that's interesting. What choice do I have? I got to go through it. So I got to go straight ahead. So it's just a fascinating. Soon when people back up and stop being so political, I think people realize that. And lastly, this, I watched Jake Tapper yesterday because he had the ambassador to England on. So I wanted to see if he was going to go trash the deal. And Jake Tapper tried to bring him there. And he said, you know, you said some bad, you know, the guy you replaced really said some bad things about Trump. And he goes, so did I. He goes, but we have to all calm down and get over it. And we've moved past that. I go, yeah, just admit
good
it.
Good advice.
Yeah. Same thing with J.D. Vance, called him a Nazi. Move on. He ends up vice president. Matt, thanks so much. I appreciate it. Look forward to your next column.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, 1-866-408-7669. I got calls next. Senator Bill Cassidy at the bottom of the hour. How does he feel about Health and Human Services team last night talking about the direction they want to take the country? He's a doctor. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
This episode is brought to you by SelectQuote. Life insurance can have a huge impact on our family's future. With SelectQuote, getting covered with the right policy for you is simple and affordable. SelectQuote's licensed insurance agents will tailor your experience to find a life insurance policy for your needs in as little as 15 minutes. And SelectQuote partners with carriers that provide policies for many conditions. SelectQuote. They shop, you save. Go to selectquote.com/SpotifyPod today to get started.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
An exciting day for Catholics and for America. We have a new pope. And against all odds, he is one of us, an American pope. The Popemobile is now a Ford F-250 with truck nuts.
The new pope actually graduated from Villanova University. It's wild that we have a pope who might have done a keg stand outside an Eagles game. Isn't that wild? Might have.
It's not just that Leo is an American. He was born in Chicago. This means officially I can no longer imitate the Pope using an Italian accent. From now on, the Pope's going to sound like this. Hey there, it's your buddy Leo. The deep dish papa. Just talk to God, and not even he can help the White Sox. Sorry. First order of business, I will be canonizing Michael Jordan. Now, let's end by saying, da, prayers.
So it's pretty funny, but it is. And everyone's having a lot of fun with it, obviously. I thought it was interesting. I'm walking by the newsroom, and I said, I can't, you know, while this happened, we got out of our meeting for One Nation, and I'm walking by the newsroom, and there's Jesse's staff. And I go, what do you think of the American Pope? And they go, got a problem. I go, what? And they just showed me his Twitter feed. And right away, they're like, the guy does not like Trump, retweeting, criticizing J.D. Vance. Obviously, he's green-oriented, right? Global warming thing. Pro-immigration, might have trouble. So far, Trump's been positive. Let's look in the past. I didn't even think of a cardinal retweeting things. Do you? Or re-Xing?
Well, I mean, now they do. I mean, do you really follow that many cardinals?
True, but wouldn't you think that they make up their own at least, or stay out of the political fray? But he's a registered Republican.
I mean, they say he might be more traditional.
Right. We'll see what happens. I just hope Trump doesn't look at this, get angry one day, and then have a little brawl with the Pope. Maybe they'll have a fresh start. Senator Bill Cassidy next.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
These are devices that are designed to get kids addictive to playing a video game, and there's an inhalation port in the device. They're showing up at our borders, and what we have been doing is just sending them back. And so the Chinese manufacturers are just sending it to another port. It's called port shopping, and they all get in. They're laughing at us. So that's going to stop in this administration. We're not going to allow these devices to get in. We're going to confiscate them.
I'll tell you, I just loved the feeling, the spirit, the friendship, the camaraderie that I saw at HHS with management last night at Brett Baron's special report. One of the hardest to get confirmed was Bobby Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., because didn't have the background in medical, in medicine, obviously not a doctor. But the other thing was he's got some views that were counterculture and maybe on vaccines got people nervous. And the main person that he had to sell on his competency was Senator Bill Cassidy, who really asked a lot of pertinent questions and even talked offline with the now HHS secretary. And joining us now is Senator Bill Cassidy himself of Louisiana. Senator, welcome back.
Hey, Brian, thanks for having me. Good to be with you. Good morning to the listeners.
Yeah, first off, I have you to comment on what Dr. Marty McCarry was saying last night about what China's doing with the vaping and the addiction. I mean, did you know this was going on? I did not.
Yeah, China is sending a lot of stuff here that we know hurts our people and hurts our small businesses. Sometimes they are ripping off intellectual property, selling something online that's just a knockoff that one takes away income from a small business, but is not made in a way that respects U.S. safety laws. Sometimes it's obviously the fentanyl. And then Marty talked about that. There needs to be an aggressiveness about this, a pushing forward on this. I've actually passed legislation to go after these counterfeit goods being sent. The president's going after the fentanyl. I like the attitude Marty had about confiscating these goods coming through the border.
Right. Here's more what they said about something else I'd love to get your take on. RFK Jr. has got a huge problem with pharmaceutical companies advertising on television. We're one of the few that allow it. But listen, cut 29.
You know, I met with pharmaceutical companies yesterday and had a very frank discussion with them about ways to limit TV commercials. When you advertise a pharmaceutical product, it's the government that is most likely going to pay for that product. You're advertising products that people aren't going to pay for, but they're going to go buy it. And you get a tax deduction to put that ad on TV, so the federal taxpayer is paying for the, you know, for the ad. Then they're paying for the product, and we use more. We use 70% of the pharmaceutical products in the world are sold to our country. We only have 4.2% of the world's population.
Your thoughts about this whole matrix? Because look, I'm on a channel that has a lot of pharmaceutical companies spending a lot of money on advertising.
So first, as regards their ability to do that, it is the Supreme Court has ruled that has the First Amendment right for them to advertise. On the other hand, we've seen that the Trump administration can use the bully pulpit to alter behavior, even when it's legal to do something. And he's absolutely right. Just because it's legal does not mean that it has to be tax deductible. And that's one of the things we'll probably be looking at in the reconciliation bill, the tax deductibility of this advertising. Now, I will also say, though, that I'm a big believer in giving the patient the power. And so if the patient knows something more about drugs and can go ask her doctor about it, I actually don't have a problem with it. I just want to make sure that the drug advertising is accurate. It doesn't pretend that someone's going to be cured of cancer when actually what it's doing is extending their life for 3 months. That's important, but also don't make it sound as if it's more than it should be. There's a lot in there, but I appreciate the Trump administration leaning into it, and I think the tax deductibility is something that we can look at here.
How's he doing so far, in your view? I know you had worries as a traditional doctor might on vaccines. Yeah, I heard what he said last night. They talked about measles. And he said, well, one of the reasons is in the Mennonite community, they don't do vaccines. So I encourage everyone to get a vaccine. So just hearing that in an interview after he already got confirmed, that must have made you feel good.
It does. And Secretary Bobby Kennedy has on numerous occasions now said that people should be getting their measles vaccine. There's still vaccine hesitancy. And we've had more people die of measles, or as many people die of measles related to deaths in the last 2 months as had in the previous 3 decades. And so clearly that has to change. We've had people, young children, infants die of pertussis and of flu. And so we need to have an effort to make America healthy again by making sure that children don't die from vaccine-preventable diseases. And there's been clearly a convergence of scientific proof that these are safe, they don't cause autism, and that if you want to make America healthy again, get your child vaccinated.
But you do think we should explore autism, correct? I mean, those numbers, do they alarm you?
Absolutely. I suspect we'll have a hearing in the Health Committee, the committee I chair, Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions, on autism. I will say that the convergence of scientific evidence is that vaccines have nothing to do with autism. And if we further investigate that, we're taking money away from actually looking at what could be a cause. So I'm very kind of like, oh my gosh, don't go down this one more time trying to prove that there's a link with vaccines, because that's been disproven. But let's go after actual causes so that we can give these parents hope. And frankly, that's where the bulk of the parents of the autistic children, that's where they are too. Let's start looking at things that could reasonably be an issue, not things that have already been disproven.
Were you ever open to vaccines being the reason?
Well, this has been established probably now 10, 15, 20 years ago. That's when all the studies were done. And it was very important to do the studies to establish just what we know, that vaccines are safe and not linked with autism. So that's been done. So my point is now, don't just kind of keep on studying that which has already been studied, where the convergence of scientific evidence has taken us. Rather, let's look at new things. There's genetic abnormalities that are seen in these children that end up with autism. Now, something appears, there seems to be some environmental exposure that triggers somebody with a certain genetic profile to become autistic as opposed to someone with the same profile not. It may be that it's an environmental exposure when the child is in the mother's womb. That would be something to look at, and that's perfectly consistent with RFK's background of looking at environmental exposures.
Do you believe the pharmaceutical companies are combining are in it to keep people hooked on their drugs, their daily drugs, in order to keep America sick? Are they looking to keep America sick so they make more money?
I don't think that. We have a lot of chronic disease. What's a chronic disease? Hypertension. Hypertension is blood pressure out of, high blood pressure is a chronic disease. If you stop taking your blood pressure medicine, it's going to go up. You're going to have a stroke and a heart attack. Most chronic diseases are chronic diseases like diabetes. And now you can argue that the drugs, the anti-obesity drugs we have now, are making people lose weight. They're no longer have diabetes. Their blood pressure gets better. The risk of heart disease gets better. So the innovations of the GLPs, or the anti-obesity drugs, are eliminating a major source of chronic disease. I just mentioned some. I could mention others. So the nature of being chronic means you take medicine chronically, but now we're seeing curative therapies for obesity, and that's driving most of our chronic disease. I'd say that's kind of evidence that they're trying to cure chronic disease.
All right.
Believe me, pharmaceutical companies have issues, but I don't see a conspiracy there.
Okay, so we know this. When it comes to the big, beautiful bill, Medicaid could be the breaking point, because nobody wants to take health care away from anyone. I thoroughly believe that. But Medicaid has been expanded to the point where it is way past its charter. Obamacare flooded millions to states that wanted it, and they said, we'll pay for it if you expand it. And now it's up to Trump to continue it. And I think 90% of all Medicaid expenditures are from the federal government, supposed to be state aid. And the amount of people eligible has expanded to the point where the money is just out of control, and some states are abusing it, like New York, the one I'm in. Where does Medicaid funding and reform, where does it stand with you in the big, beautiful bill?
Hey, Brian, I just like the way you frame it. First, let me say my background is as a physician taking care of the uninsured and the Medicaid patient in a hospital dedicated for the uninsured and the Medicaid patient. That's where I spent 20 years of my life. This matters to me. But what you can't help but notice, as you point out, is as the federal government has increased their funding, states have been pulling their dollars out. States have used the federal taxpayer to balance their budget, to cut taxes, to spend money elsewhere, except where they're supposed to be, on the state share of the Medicaid budget. And the federal government can put more and more and more money in there, and states will just continue to pull their dollars out. This is like trying to keep air on one side of a screen door. You can't do it without some sort of reform. Now, when I speak to Medicaid providers, the kind of, the people who do it right, they say there's so much money sloshing around that certainly you could do some reforms. Patients would maintain their benefits, but you could run a tighter ship. makes sense. If you look at the improper payments in Medicaid, it's in the tens of billions, if not hundreds of billions of dollars. So our goal is to preserve benefits for the beneficiary, to make sure the dollars are going where they need to be going, but at the same time, keep the federal government from going into bankruptcy, if you will, from having a debt crisis because of out-of-control spending. We can do that. I've got ideas how to do that. And first thing, keep the patient front and center.
All right, Senator, you're as outraged as I am about what's happened at Brooklyn yesterday with the anti-Israeli, anti-Semitic riots and encampments. And then we saw the takeover of the library on Wednesday. 62 of the 100 rioters were women. We have all their names, all their IDs. What are you calling on Columbia to do?
I think Columbia responded well. I think President Trump acknowledged that they responded well. They limited it. They brought in security. When they needed help, they brought in NYPD. And keep in mind, these protesters, they talked about the others in the library. It is just before finals. People were in there studying for finals. There are other professors grading papers, and protesters came on and disrupted the academic mission. They put up graffiti and posters, and they put on masks so you couldn't see who they were, which means to say that they were ashamed. And so all that was responded to quickly by the administration. There needs to be more of that. You should not be disrupting the educational experience of those students, right, to make your point. And so now let's find out which of them were students and which of them were paid protesters. There's a lot of evidence that there's outside money flooding,
yep,
to get paid protesters to come in. That needs to stop.
I hear you. And by the way, I think they should be expelled. I don't care if they're going to graduate in a week. If they did that at that library, they should be expelled. They should not get a degree. Get their money back, whatever it needs. Senator, I know you're running for re-election. NBC is reporting that a former governor might be getting into the race. I want you to hear this report. Cut 50.
An attention to New Orleans and Louisiana at all times. Yes. But John Bel Edwards is such an interesting figure in that state.
Yes.
Could he make a run of it in a state that is widely seen as red, as pro-Trump? And of course, Bill Cassidy cuts an interesting profile here, too, because he's someone who voted to convict the president on those impeachment charges when it came to January 6th. I mean, what might that race look like,
yeah,
if Edwards gets in?
That's a good question. And Cassidy has a primary, too. Yeah. So if he loses, could Democrats have maybe a little bit better shot at it? And of course, it's not surprising that Schumer is looking at Bel Edwards here, but it is worth noting that governors sometimes struggle to make that Senate switch when the state is so lopsided in the other direction.
Well, you're looking at a possible primary. Well, you're looking at a primary challenge from John Fleming, the Republican state treasurer, and possibly a general against the former governor. How do you feel your matchup?
I match up fantastically. Right now, in the first Trump term, I supported President Trump 90% of the time. In this Trump term, he's got two cabinet secretaries that he would not have unless Bill Cassidy had gotten him through. I continue to enable his agenda, his positive agenda. Now, I can promise you, and I've worked hard over the last 10 years to bring things to my state that benefit my state. So the primary challenge, we take that. As regards the former governor, he is going to support Chuck Schumer and vote against Donald Trump 90% of the time. I'm not going to support Chuck Schumer, and I'm going to support the president 90% of the time. And so I feel pretty comfortable that our state's going to return a conservative Republican, and that conservative Republican will be me.
Have you spoken to the president since he got back in office?
I just had a press conference. I was one of four senators invited, talking about economic development across the nation, but mentioned three projects in Louisiana. Gave me a big shout out. Whenever you announce somebody from Louisiana, I was the one guy out there applauding. So we have absolutely connected.
Well, put it this way. If he held grudges, you wouldn't have Vice President J.D. Vance. Who is an opponent of his. Senator, I hope it works out. I think you're a real asset to the country. We love having you on the show. And thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Brian. I appreciate it, man.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. Back in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. Not everyone is careful with your personal information, which might explain why there's a victim of identity theft every 5 seconds in the U.S. Fortunately, there's LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity
If your identity is stolen, a U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year by visiting LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Do you take any responsibility for not hearing the concerns of voters on the border security or cost of living sooner? And do you take any responsibility for Trump's reelection?
Yes, I do, because look, I was in charge and he won. So, you know, I take responsibility.
All right, that'll agree with. But they went out and said, I got 7 million more votes than him. I would have beaten him. Remember Nancy Pelosi's conversation she had, not denied, with President Biden when he's trying to get him to drop out. And he said, look, you're not winning in the polls. You got to step aside. He says, I'm winning in every poll. He said, put on your pollster. And he put on the pollster. He's like, what are you showing him? We're not seeing anything like that. And then I watched Kayleigh McEnany, who retreated. She's great at pulling this stuff up. He was trailing in every single battleground state before the even before the debate, with Donald Trump having all the problems he's having with all the ridiculous trials that he had. And he's still in denial. He would have won. And then he goes out and he says this about why Harris lost. Cut three.
Why do you think the vice president lost? And were you surprised?
Oh. I wasn't surprised, not because I didn't think the vice president was the most qualified person to be president. And she is. I wasn't surprised because they went the route of the sexist route, the whole route. I mean, this is a woman. She's this. She's that. I've never seen quite as successful and a consistent campaign undercutting the notion that a woman couldn't lead the country and a woman of mixed race.
That is the most insulting thing you could say about the country. Oh, they went sexist? I can't remember. Out of everything Donald Trump did, I don't think, if you look at Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden running against all those people on the stage to initially get the nomination, and also he had to run through primaries to get the nomination again. Not one gender-oriented statement or attack was because of someone's skin color or their height or their gender. It was, you're in my way, I'm going to run through you, and that's it. And to say that she lost because of racism and sexism, besides that, I love the country. Or any Republican that voted, the 50 million, the 50% that voted for Donald Trump, that got him the popular vote in every battleground state, sexist, racist. That's reason. And by the way, if you're Joe Biden, I don't think you want to keep bringing up the 7 million extra votes. I think the election 2020, I think he won. But I cannot hear an explanation of where those 7 million extra votes came from in his column, because as far as I know, nobody was excited about voting for him.
We did it, Joe.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world, Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way. Arthur Brooks in about 45 minutes, a deep thinker. He's got a brand new book out, Build the Life You Want. Anna Seveskova, the chief operating officer of the Ukrainian Freedom Project. It looks like President Zelensky made some real progress at St. Peter's with President Trump. Heard that from a number of people. And now, after a conversation yesterday, a very positive post on Truth Social for the Ukrainian cause and frustration with the Russians. They're not moving at all. I don't think they understand how close Donald Trump is to not making this a 50-50 split and start really towards moving towards the Ukrainians, or if J.D. Vance gets his way, just moving all away from these negotiations entirely. Let's bring in Mark Halper now, as insightful politically as anyone in the country. He's got his extremely successful two-way broadcast almost every day. He's a political analyst, best-selling author. Mark, welcome back.
Brian, nice to be back. I hate to correct the host off the top, but it's not almost every day. It's twice every day.
Is it really twice every day?
Not 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. Monday through Friday.
See, in your format, you could really decide when you want to do it, but you are holding yourself to a schedule.
Yeah, well, we could. You know, the reality is there's a lot of differences, right, from TV versus YouTube and other distribution. But some things aren't different. And appointment viewing, we've learned, is pretty important to get people to say, you know, here's when it's on. So We're consistent, but we do breaking news as well. So we'll do special reports, but the regular shows are Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. Eastern time.
All right, let's start moving through it now. I guess first things first, the president announced his first trade deal with the U.K. How do you think it's resonating? Because there were some questions, discerning questions to the president in the Oval Office. Like, hey, is this really that big of a deal? What's your sense?
You know, it's not a final deal, and nobody thought it was going to be. I think you got to be realistic about why it's a positive, and then certainly if it's never doesn't materialize and get locked in, it's going to be a negative. But in the short term, very positive for the president. First of all, it demonstrates that something which we knew, the markets love it. Now, the markets love also the China talks taking place this weekend in Geneva with Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary. But one of the reasons to get an early deal was to calm the markets. The markets have been doing very well this week. Second, it's positive is they want to send some momentum. They want to be able to say, we told you we get deals in these 90 days. Well, here's the first one. And so anything that shows momentum to calm members of Congress and people in the business community, consumers that say, yeah, there are going to be deals that are going to lower in these tariffs is a good thing politically for the president and for the country. And then finally, it's a template, right? All the countries wanted to be first. No one really knows exactly outside the inner circle why the UK got to be first. But now India and Japan and South Korea and others are going to say, well, there's one deal. Let's see what we can build off of to get our deal next.
So I talked to Senator Thune this morning, and he was on our couch. And he even mentioned to me, too, is like the tariffs got people in South Dakota nervous. We're an ag state. And there's probably is going to be an ask of about $60 billion to the farmers like last time to do some supplementals until we can get some of these deals done, especially with China. Do you expect the Democrats to give them a hard time on that?
I do. And also free market folks. Ken Griffin, one of the most successful business people in this country, is critical of the carve outs, the special exceptions, because it's crony capitalism, right? It's the government picking winners and losers. There are lots of people who are hurt by tariffs. I talked to a woman this week who does wedding planning in Chicago, and she does custom cocktail napkins. They're made in China. They've gone from like $150 for, 500 napkins to twice that. She's not a special interest that's going to get a carve-out exemption for Chinese cocktail napkins for her weddings. And that means she's being discriminated against. So I don't like the carve-outs, but we know that that's just part of trade policy. And so it's unfortunate, but it's going to happen.
So how about this? The president's tactic yesterday and today, the Post, Bloomberg had it 60%, but he also mentioned getting out to 80%. Scott Bessent, you can make your own decision. But when you go to Switzerland to negotiate with the Chinese for the next 2 days, you want to go down to 80% in order to get something in return? Go ahead. Your call. Interesting negotiation tactic.
Yeah, I wonder what the founding fathers would say about Donald Trump using Truth Social to start to bandy about different percentages. Donald Trump is a master of this stuff. He knows how to sort of try to calibrate with public statements, including on social media, to get people to feel like there can be progress. And, Senator Cruz has been quite open, some senators more in private, saying to the president, like, if you're using these tariffs as a tool to make the trading position of the United States better around the world, fantastic. If there are things you think they're going to be on permanently and they're going to start raising prices for American consumers, no, people aren't going to be on board for that. So I think the markets will have a very good day, not just in anticipation of the talks in Geneva, but in the hearing the president say maybe these tariffs are already going to start coming down, back towards pre-Independence Day levels.
So, Mark, what's your speculation, because I haven't read anything yet, of what the president's big announcement is? That it's going to address a problem that's been out there for a long time.
Yeah.
He wouldn't say something like that if it wasn't substantial.
Yeah.
You have any idea?
Well, CBS News says they know what it is. Some people said they thought it was the trade announcement with England. My co-host on the morning meeting, Sean Spicer, Dan Turrentine, both said that, well, they thought that was it. CBS says it's an announcement having to do with the cost of prescription drugs. I think that sounds more like what it was. That fits the description in terms of it's on a very important topic and that it's one of the biggest things ever announced. I didn't understand quite from the CBS story what this was, but my sense is that it's that, and that's going to be anticlimactic for people like me who guessed it was peace between Saudi Arabia and Israel. But I'll look to see the details. Maybe it will do something to substantially lower the cost of prescription drugs. And again, not sexy issue for everybody, but if you're an American who's reliant on being able to afford prescription drugs for yourself or for your family, this could be a big deal, as the president said.
So President Biden is making it known he's back. He says he's got a book deal. Some people say it's $30 million for him and Jill. He's got to get it done in a year. So he goes on The View, a place he feels comfortable. And he was asked a very succinct and important question by Alyssa Farah Griffin. Cut five.
Mr. President, since you left office, there have been a number of books that have come out deeply sourced from Democratic sources that claim in your final year there was a dramatic decline in your cognitive abilities in the final year of your presidency. What is your response to these allegations, or are these sources wrong?
They are wrong. There's nothing to sustain that. And so we went to work, and we got it done. And, you know, one of the things that
Alyssa, you know, one of the things I think is that the people who wrote those books were not in the White House with us. Mm-hmm. And they didn't see how hard Joe worked every single day. Joe worked really hard. I think he was a great president. And if you look at things today.
So you got the spirit. If you want to tell someone that you're cognitively okay, you shouldn't stop mid-sentence, number one. And Jill stepped in, just like rumored to be the case, even at the few cabinet meetings she had. What's your take, Mark?
Well, it's an hour-long interview. They were on almost the entire show. President Biden did some of it by himself, and then former First Lady joined. I mean, you know, it's 11 a.m. That's kind of his sweet spot for being, you know, not showing, you know, full cognitive decline. There were moments that were a little rough, but for the most part, you know, he was there, but not because of cognitive decline, but just because of the desire to spin. He said a bunch of stuff that just wasn't true. And they can continue to say that all that happened was that he had a cold and won bad debate. They can continue to act as if that's the truth. And you don't need an investigative reporting ability to know that that's not the truth. We saw him in public many times exhibiting cognitive decline over many years. So I find it frustrating as a journalist and concerning as a human being that they're still out there trying to sell America on the story that this was a one-off and that he was fine the rest of his presidency. When again, you don't need inside sources. Right. As I say, you just need a C-SPAN subscription.
Which is kind of interesting, Mark, because he said one of the reasons that Kamala Harris lost was because of sexism and racism. Thanks. Yeah, I appreciate it. I don't really think, and you might correct me on this, Trump didn't run against a woman and a minority. He ran against a Democrat. I don't think he was singling out a gender attack. Did you pick that up as a tactic?
I mean, I'm sure there were some tweets by people who may have done that, but it's a horrible thing to say about the American people.
Yes.
Because I mean, he's not saying Trump did these horrible things and they had no effect. It's saying the American people voted in reaction to trying to turn against her. I mean, I'm sure there's some people who won't vote for a woman or a non-white person for president. I'm sure that's the case. But I don't think I'd put that in the top 100 reasons why she lost.
What's the sense among Democrats now that he's coming out, did the BBC, did The View? I'm sure he's going to be doing more things. What is that your sense as they try to recalibrate and find out what their effective message is going to be for 26 and 28?
I mean, I think there's a sliver of Democrats I talk to who say it's all hands on deck. Everyone needs to be out there with a megaphone opposing Donald Trump and being in the resistance. But the vast majority of Democrats, strategists, elected officials, donors, activists, they don't want to see the Bidens on the stage. They don't want to see them taking up space from other younger Democrats who can be part of the future. They don't want to see the conversation be about, even on The View, where they're sympathetic to him, about the last campaign and about his decisions that he made, about what people knew and when they knew it about his acuity. So I think he's out there in part because this is all he knows, right? For decades, all he knew was being in the spotlight, being sought after for commentary. And I think he's partly out there because he's trying to reignite Biden Inc. and have a way to make money. And I think he's partly out there because he believes Donald Trump is a menace and he wants to talk. But as I said, very few Democrats I talk to think that his voice is one that is valuable for the party right now and trying to figure out the path forward.
Mark, I spent a lot of time looking at the big, beautiful bill today to get ready for the Senator Thune interview. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of friction and a lot of disagreement. The New Yorkers and the ones in the blue states with the high state tax want that state tax deduction as high as 60%, including Mike Lawler. They're never going to get that. And now they're talking about decreasing the amount of cuts to the point where they won't make the tax cuts permanent. I'm hearing about that. And President Trump saying, I'm open to raising the tax bracket. You know, that's a third rail for many conservative Republicans. Yeah. Is this typical of the disarray behind a big bill, or do you think this is really troubling if you're Speaker Johnson?
Great. Well, perfectly framed. And you didn't even get to all the issues that are currently dividing them. You did the biggest ones, but there are others. Failure is not an option. If the party didn't pass this bill, it would be a disaster for the party, for the president, for their agenda. So I still think more likely than not they'll pass it. I think what we're missing now is what we call a forcing mechanism, right? These folks like negotiating over tax rates or Medicare, Medicaid cutting or funding. They have no deadline. There's nothing forcing them to sit in the room and say, well, okay, I'm ready to compromise. They need a deadline. And the deadline could be Christmas. It could be the expiration of the tax cuts that President Trump passed in his first term. But the real deadline that's going to be out there soon is the so-called X date, the date at which if the government doesn't raise the debt ceiling, the United States is in a default. Once that date is set, it will focus the minds of these folks. And some of these very tough issues that you laid out on taxes and on spending, they'll have to resolve them. And I think they will. But there's increasing talk that they will fail and that they're going to have to do a deal with the Democrats in order to get the bill done. And that would be a very big disaster for the party. And they'll start to use that as a talking point and to say everybody's going to have to compromise within the Republican family, or we're going to have to turn to Hakeem Jeffries to get this into law.
Right. Is there as much disappointment as it seems for Hakeem Jeffries as a leader? Because it's obviously if Etienne, the former staffer with Nancy Pelosi, if Nancy Pelosi didn't want her to go out there and go after Jeffries, she wouldn't have. I mean, is there people getting upset?
Yeah. So following Nancy Pelosi is a very tough act, right? She's one of the best there ever has been in either party at a very difficult job of being the leader of a House caucus that is very, very diverse in every respect, including ideologically. If Jeffries weren't so well liked, you'd see more of what you cited of one former Pelosi advisor speaking out. He's very well liked. He works very hard. He's likable naturally, but he works very hard to be on the good side of his colleagues. So that point of view that says he's not being tough enough, aggressive enough, ferocious enough to and effective enough to counter Donald Trump is something you'll hear privately from a lot of folks. But it's tempered, especially in public, because they like the guy.
Laura Loomer, influence on Trump. I mean, I know Dr. Neshawat, one of the finest people ever. A degree in the Caribbean is not atypical for bad doctors. Get great degrees. A lot of times you got to leave the country to get in. And number two, Mike Waltz. If you want Mike Waltz out, you're the president of the United States. But I hope it's not because of Laura Loomer. Is that what you're hearing?
You mean White House personnel director Laura Loomer?
Yeah, I mean, that's what it seems. I hope she's overstating her impact.
Well, we know some things that have not really been disputed. She sat in the Oval Office with Mike Waltz before he was promoted to be the UN ambassador and said to the president, the following people on the National Security Council staff have to go. And he fired them. So she's very influential. Now, she's not in favor of the replacement Surgeon General nominee. So if Casey Means is confirmed, then Loomer will have won one, but then lost one. She's very much opposed. So it's an interesting thing to seemingly let her have her way on the nominee right before the confirmation hearings, but then put it right back and say, well, we're going to replace the one you don't like with someone else you don't like. So we'll have to see. She's not all powerful, but she's influential. When she goes after someone, it hangs in the balance. She doesn't always win, but she's won a lot.
Do you know why? Do you know why she has this influence?
Well, it's interesting because you could say, well, she's got a lot of influence online with MAGA. But we see sometimes she goes after people who have support from other people in MAGA, Tucker Carlson, Charlie Kirk, Don Jr. I think her influence comes in part because she puts in sharp relief biographical aspects or ideological statements from folks that some people in MAGA don't like. And she whips them up. And for whatever reason, the president in particular, more than anybody who works for him, as I understand it, just says, I don't want that heat. I don't want to have to deal with that. So let's just cut our losses and move on. And it's an extraordinary story because I don't remember anybody in any previous administration I've covered having Laura Loomer's influence over these personnel decisions.
There's a lot of unprecedented things always with Trump 1 and Trump 2. And here's another. That's why Mark is so valuable. Your insight and your contacts have never been greater. Congratulations on everything and on your new podcast.
Thank you, Brian. Good to see you.
Mark Halperin, thank you so much. You'll see him twice on two-way, twice a day. Back in a moment.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
How is the relationship between the Trump administration? Obviously, your foreign secretary, David Lammy, has had some impolitic things to say about President Trump, calling him a woman-hating, neo-Nazi sympathizing sociopath back in 2018.
I know, but everyone went in for this sort of hyperventilation in the past about Mr. Trump. I did too. You know, I'm afraid it comes with the turf, but we've all moved on. I'm glad to say. Look, Keir Starmer and President Trump are not cut from the same cloth, politically. They're not. However, what's more important than that, I just think that when they're talking about policies and serious matters in the world, they do see eye to eye. And that's what's important.
And you know what? I'm so glad you grabbed that. I thought it was so important because he's going to ask a question, going to throw out a quote and go, yeah, yeah, that's where he is. But we have to deal with the American people have answered. Instead, he just stops it. He goes, and for him to say, I said that stuff too, but we've moved on. We've moved past it. The hyperventilating, 100%. He doesn't hold a grudge. Starmer's a liberal guy. He came in. He's a new president. How's it going? I guarantee you, if Trump goes to the UK right now, if it's not the Muslims showing up, the anti-Semitic ones, I think he'd get a pretty good reception.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I've been a United States Marine, been on Special Forces Green Beret. I never met fear until I came to Ukraine.
Russian forces are closing churches and persecuting Christians.
The soldiers stopped worship service. They arrested me.
They destroyed Andrei's church.
Івановські особливо церкви.
Russia is torturing and murdering Ukrainian Christians for their faith.
This is good versus evil.
I agree. And that's the name of the documentary, A Faith Under Siege, Russia's Hidden War on Ukraine's Christians. Joining us now, back with us in studio, is Steve Moore, not The Economist, the former chief of staff for the U.S. House of Representatives and founder of the Ukraine Freedom Project, which raises money to aid Ukrainians, and Anna Shevskova, the chief operating officer for the Ukraine Freedom Project. Welcome to both of you. Welcome back, I should say.
Yeah, man, always great to be with you.
So first off, what are we going to see in this documentary?
Well, this is one of those stories that's just not getting out. And you know, there's 2.5 million Christians who are living in occupied Ukraine who can't go to church because Vladimir Putin has shut down every church in occupied Ukraine, not controlled by the Kremlin. And if you have a Bible study in your home, then that's punishable by 20 years.
How do they affect Ukraine?
Pardon me?
Is it in Ukraine?
Yeah, yeah, in occupied Ukraine, Russians. Occupied okay. Ukraine, yeah. So this is the Russians doing this. You hear a bit about Ukraine and Christians, but their real crime here is Vladimir Putin's torture and murder of Ukrainian Christians.
Right. So what could you tell us, Anna, about what I would see and how I would how my security might be hampered as a Christian in that occupied area?
Yeah, Brian. So I grew up 30 miles from the Russian border. I grew up speaking Russian, so I'm one of Ukrainians whom Vladimir Putin came to liberate. And now every day of my life, every minute of it, I devote to giving a voice to those 2.5 million Christians whom Vladimir Putin already liberated and who cannot go to church every Sunday like you and me can go, because they can be imprisoned, they will be tortured, they can be killed. Vladimir Putin killed 47 faith leaders, Christian leaders. There are 630 churches that have been destroyed. And like, there is not a single Catholic priest left on the occupied Ukraine. People cannot worship God.
What's his problem with Catholics? What's his problem with Christians? Because doesn't he have a Russian Orthodox Church?
The reasons that why he's persecuting these people, because like, there is no higher power for them than God and Jesus Christ. And Putin wants people to worship the state, the Kremlin.
Like a communist.
Yeah, he doesn't want the competition. You know, so Christians, they have a God. They have someone they follow. It's Jesus. And Putin does not want the competition.
So why did you want to do this documentary? To explain to people that it's bad in Ukraine, but it's really bad for Christians?
Yeah. Well, you know, again, you know, there's some stories that we as conservatives know just don't get out. You don't know why. But, you know, this is a story of torture and persecution that's in a magnitude that is not like anything since the Soviet Union.
So I want you to hear a little bit more. Cut 43.
Sure.
Why does Russia hate evangelical Christians?
They're afraid. Our churches never want to be under government, under communistic party, under KGB, under dictatorship regime. Russia persecutes evangelicals because we have just one leader. It's Jesus Christ.
And they don't want to hear that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so what do you say to people who say that in your area you speak Russian and he's helping you by bringing you back to Russia where you belong, that you should never have been away from Russia?
We don't want to be with Russia. We have more in common. We have more values in common with America than with Russia and any other country. We value freedom more than anything else, including freedom of religion. Ukraine has the biggest freedom of religion in Europe. Like it's separate from the state, and like people can practice any religion they want in Ukraine. This is what we want to keep, right. And Russia will never allow this.
When did you realize this, Steve Moore?
Well, you know, I went to Ukraine on day 5 of the war to help because I don't like bullies, and Putin is a bully. And so I was doing humanitarian aid work, and I met a guy who is a Christian. He was taking people out of occupied Luhansk in 2014, and the Russians grabbed him, pulled him out of his car, took him to the basement, which is a euphemism for torture. Mm-hmm. And they tortured him for 25 days, including one day when the Russian soldiers were tasing him with electricity, and a Russian Orthodox priest was standing over him trying to cast demons out of him for being an evangelical Christian. I found this mind-blowing and something that nobody knew about. And then I heard other people say that Zelensky's persecuting Christians. And I live in Kyiv.
We do hear that here.
Yeah. Well, it's nonsense. And I'll tell you why. There's the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. It's a branch of the Russian Orthodox Church. The Russian Orthodox Church is a working arm of the Kremlin. The Russian Orthodox Church has declared a holy war on Ukraine and the West. Now, you know, I don't know what happened in your church last Sunday, but mine, nobody declared a holy war. And so the Ukrainian Orthodox Church is a branch of the Russian Orthodox Church. And there's some really bad actors in there who are on trial for doing things like, you know, priests that have been targeting Russian artillery or housing Russian soldiers. And so it's a national security threat. It has nothing to do with religion.
So that's the perception that people keep saying, well, you know, Zelensky is shutting down churches. Your thoughts?
No, he doesn't shut down the churches. So we want to separate. We have our independent church, which we got in 2018 only. And we have Ukrainian Orthodox Church. Most of people switched to this Ukrainian church.
Gotcha.
But those priests who report to Kremlin, they are committing crimes. They're national security threat, as Steven said. And the government gave them a warning to cut ties with Moscow, and they didn't do it. They didn't do any official steps to cut ties with Moscow. This is the only thing that we wanted them to do.
Right. So that's a huge issue. So what's the war like for you and your family?
They still live there 30 miles from the Russian border. This city was under siege for 6 weeks. It was really tough, but it didn't surrender. And now it's the city of heroes, as they call it in Ukraine, because they didn't
let... And that city is?
Yeah. It's
Name it. What is it?
It's in Sumy region.
Yeah, we don't want it.
For security
reasons.
Oh,
you don't? Yeah,
yeah. It's in Sumy region. It's between Sumy and Kharkiv. And the life... The Iranian Shahed drones are flying over their roofs every night on their way to Kyiv, but people adjust to everything. They continue living their lives, growing vegetables. They have a big garden.
But, you know, Steve, they keep saying that they're trying to denazify Ukraine. That's what Vladimir Putin said yesterday at his big parade.
Yes. And that is, I mean, that's stunning, right? So Ukraine has a Jewish president. 70-something percent of the people voted for him. They had a Jewish prime minister at one time. They've got a Muslim defense minister. So and that's just utter nonsense. What that belief is, if anyone believes it in America, is that's the result of about $1.6 billion of the Russian propaganda that they're spending worldwide. And so, Vladimir Putin is not a man of faith. He's not a Christian leader. He's not defending Christendom. He is killing families. He is killing Christians. You know, evangelical Christians.
Stealing children.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not sure that's a family value. There's nearly 20,000 children that the Ukrainian government has identified as being trafficked out of Ukraine by the Russians. And that's just a drop in the bucket because that's just the ones that they've identified. There's tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands.
Here's General Jack Keane on the negotiations so far. Cut 40.
Their concessions are completely unreasonable. They want Zelensky out of power. They want the Constitution to change. They want to demilitarize Ukraine's military, and they want to get territory that they're not occupying. All of that is very tough, and that's what the ploy here is, to try to get those concessions or some of them before some kind of a peace agreement. But in terms of Putin and where you started from, he's playing hardball here, and I really think it's about time for the administration to take the gloves off and start dealing with him very toughly in terms of crippling sanctions and increased military assistance to Ukraine.
I guess you agree with that, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Right. What would be the biggest beneficiary? What do you think? Where are they getting their weapons, the Russians? Are they making them themselves? Are they getting from Iran, from China?
They purchased
About $4 billion of Iranian drones. So Iranians have a suicide drone, kamikaze drone, called a Shahed. And they're using them against Israel. But they've sent about 15,000 of these things to Russia. Russia then sends them past our apartment building in Kyiv and hits civilian targets. And they're using that data to improve these drones and improve Iran's weapons so they can be used against Israel.
Right. But I understand Ukraine is starting to manufacture their own drones, making their own drones, like their own weapons, right?
Yeah. Well, and I'll tell you, people are looking for the benefit of the U.S. investment in this war. And I got to tell you, there's a lot of it. You know, there's three countries that are leading the world in drone warfare. It's Russia, China, and Ukraine, and Iran. So there's four. Notice that only one of those guys is on our side, and we don't have the type of weapons that are as effective as the Ukrainian weapons. So the technology transfer we're getting from this war and learning how our adversaries use drones is incalculable.
How is the U.S. viewed right now over there, Anna?
We love America. We have American friends who were coming to Ukraine after the situation in Oval Office, and they were asking us this question, like, what is the perception? Is it safe to come to Ukraine? Americans are heroes. Regardless of what politicians are doing, like normal people, Americans, they will be welcomed. We thank you every time we see any American in Ukraine for coming there, for being with us, for supporting us. Mm-hmm. It means a lot to us.
What about seeing St. Peter's Basilica, Zelensky and Trump one-on-one? What did that do for the morale of the Ukrainians?
It feels great. America is our biggest ally in this war. We want, without America, my parents would not be alive now. We might not have the country by now. So, have you seen our government building good relations with America again?
Right.
It feels good, and, the morale is much higher now.
And, Steve, I heard good things came out of that meeting, and now they're talking regularly, Zelensky and Trump.
Yeah, that is really great news. And I think President Trump has been super patient with Putin, and I think he's working really hard. But, there's carrots and sticks in negotiations, and Putin— is just being disrespectful to President Trump.
And there's no question. Yeah, and he's embarrassing him. And Trump knows that. That's the worst thing you could do to him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's the best way to make a friend out of Zelensky is to have Putin, have Putin treat him like he's treating President Trump. And so
here's what General Keane said about Ukraine, Cup 41.
Ukraine, on the other hand, has totally agreed to a comprehensive ceasefire. Stop in place the territory that's being occupied. Separate the forces. They've agreed to all of that. And I think that's very reasonable on their part. The good news, too, this week, obviously, is the mineral deal that was signed and the political and economic and also security implications that generational deal has for Ukraine.
Wow. So go out and check out the documentary from Anna and Steve. It's called Faith Under Siege, Russia's Hidden War on Ukraine's Christians. Is there a sense, Anna, before I let you go, that this could be coming to an end soon, one way or another? Do people want to? Would there be a willingness to stop, even if you don't get your land back?
There is a mistake that people think that, like, Ukrainians want to fight. We don't want to fight. We just don't want Russians to kill us. And we have to defend ourselves. If there is a way to stop this war without us fighting in any way so that Putin didn't, like, just pause the war, took 2 years to regroup and didn't invade again, we will be open to do this. But we need to remember that, like, this is not the war over territories. There are 3.5 million people under occupation. 2.5 million of them are Christians who can die any minute for praising God. And there are more than 20,000 children who were abducted, and we want them back. So this is not about territories. This is about people.
I hear you. And Steve, final thought?
Yeah, I think that we're at a pivot point. I think Trump is talking about Putin asking for too much. J.D. Vance, who has always been very adamantly against Ukraine, is saying that Putin wants too much. And I think our film right now is an opportunity for your audience and American believers to understand what's at stake. And it's not a war over territory. It's a spiritual war. You know, this is Russia attacking Ukraine's Christians. There's a holy war being declared on this.
Where do we get this documentary?
Well, so you can go to faithundersiege.com. It's going to be widely distributed a little bit later this month. And you will hear about it soon.
It will air on CBN tomorrow.
Oh, you can't say that.
Oh, no, you can say, okay, CBN is fine.
Yeah.
Christian Broadcasting.
Yeah, CBN tomorrow. And they're going to show it 6 times over the weekend.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's great. It's really, we got a really solid group of partners. And hopefully we can show it on Fox sometime.
Absolutely. Steve Moore, Anna Shaveskova, thanks so much for joining us. Congratulations on Faith Under Siege.
Thank you, Brian.
And just win, okay?
Thanks, man.
Bag and woman.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
USA, USA, USA.
Well, who is that?
That was from The Daily Show, but it was just very fun.
Oh, yeah.
He was very excited about the new Pope.
Right. I mean, the fact that he's a White Sox fan, I mean, you ever think the Pope, you just thought they were going to be detached and they'd say something in another language and they might come visit. But now you have a guy that went to Villanova.
I know. I mean, just like Fallon said, he might have done a keg stand before an Eagles game. Might have.
Right.
I mean, another headline I loved was the new Pope might have a membership to Costco.
That is true. But you know, it's another thing. You know, do you find it interesting that all these priests, the really good ones, always say they when they were born, the first thing they wanted to be is a priest. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's all they ever thought about. St. Cardinal Dolan says the same thing. Never thought of another option.
Yeah. So the new Pope's brother was on CBS this morning. Had I known we were going to discuss it, I would have pulled it. But they sort of asked, like, well, you know, he was your little brother. Come on. He had to have gotten in trouble. He goes, he didn't, and honestly, none of us really did, just because the way our parents raised us. I'm like, there were 3 boys, right? Can you imagine a house of 3 boys and everyone behaving?
Right.
That's unheard of.
I know. Put it this way. I remember in Fred Claus, because I remember Vince Vaughn was always in trouble, but Santa wasn't. And that's why you knew he was special. in that documentary.
Just like the Pope.
Just very similar to the Pope. Like he had those saint-like qualities.
Yeah.
And as I brought up on Fox and Friends earlier, the only they need the chimney twice. They need the chimney for to pick a Pope with the white smoke and for Santa. Am I correct?
That's fair.
At the Vatican?
Yep. Twice a year.
Don't forget, BrianKilmeade.com is where you find out how to get tickets to Dayton, Ohio, History, Liberty, and Laughs, June 21st.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Shannon Bream standing by. Gianna Caldwell a little bit later. Bring us inside Chicago's reaction to getting a Pope from Chicago. And then one that goes to Villanova. That'll be great. Keep in mind, too, it's going to be a big day. There's a lot going on. The President of the United States getting set to go overseas. Big event yesterday on Mother's Day. SpaceX, the Falcon 9 rocket, will launch another batch. 26 Starlink mini satellites. That's going to happen a little bit today. We're going to get back to White House press briefing. Caroline Leavitt will be doing that for, I think, the first one this week. And then we opened up today. You probably don't know this because you were asleep, but Fox and Friends, right before Fox and Friends, Pope Leo ran his first mass. And I believe it went well, so he gets to keep the job as Pope. So before we get to Shannon Bream, big three.
Number three.
You know, I met with pharmaceutical companies yesterday and had a very frank discussion with them about ways to limit TV commercials. When you advertise a pharmaceutical product, it's the government that is most likely going to pay for that product.
Did not know that. The MAHA movement goes from program and an idea to big time power at HHS. RFK's team with Casey Means talks about how America is about to get healthy again. We'll then discuss their friendship, what I saw last night, and why I'm so encouraged.
Number two.
With this deal, the UK joins the United States in affirming that reciprocity and fairness is an essential and vital principle of international trade.
There you go. One is done. Trump brings home a trade deal with the UK as massive meetings with China looms Saturday and Sunday, and it's going to be in Switzerland. We're going to look at the numbers and what Donald Trump just put on Truth Social.
Number one.
I guess they like you. They miss you today.
Yeah. I miss being here.
Yeah.
I'm actually interviewing for a job as a cameraman.
Now he's calling for investigations and claiming the pardons are void and vacant.
Oh, he's vacant.
Why is he so fixated on you and blaming you for everything?
I beat him.
Yeah. Biden's rehab tour causing a relapse. The BBC and The View appearances have one thing in common. Joe can't communicate and wrestles with reality. And in the end, his legacy and his party will pay the price, in my view. And that's why I watched him. He went for a long time. But basically, his voice sounds so weak. He lost himself in his own mind a couple of times. And he's delusional that he was ahead in the polls, he would have won, and that the Americans are sexist, racist place, or else it would be President Kamala Harris. I know, I hate saying it too. Shannon Bream, off anchor of Fox News Sunday, Fox News chief legal correspondent, joins us now. Hey, Shannon, welcome back.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
How's the rehab tour going for Joe Biden as he kind of announced that he's got a book that he's got to put out in a year, a big memoir to find out what we went through, and maybe he's going to learn for the first time what he did as president.
Well, there's so much there. First of all, apparently Dr. Jill also kept really good diaries, like I would too if I was in the White House, and that would potentially be a big part of the book. So maybe we're going to hear more from her than we are from him about what was going on. And the fact that she was with him at The View yesterday and stepped in every time he seemed to sort of be losing it, I don't think that this return to the spotlight is great for him or for Democrats, because a lot of them here in Washington are saying sort of like, oh, no, we would just like to turn that page and let that be over.
Not really. Listen to Joe. Cut two.
Knowing what you know now, do you think you would have beat him?
Yeah, he's still got 7 million fewer votes.
Yes.
Okay. A lot of people didn't show up, number one. Number two, they're very close in those toss-up states. It was it wasn't a slam dunk.
So he really believes that the polls that had Nancy Pelosi and his party freaked out would have been reversed, I guess, and he would have beat Trump?
Through magic, I don't know, because think about what they were, what we're learning now about their internal polling, how bad it was. They knew he was in real trouble. And listen, the vice president, for whoever, however many reasons, although he said sexism and racism, I don't know, all this other kind of stuff. I mean, she had $1 billion to burn through very quickly. It was very non-traditional, not the setup that she or any other nominee would want. But the fact that he thinks as badly as she did that he could have done better when all the polling said the exact opposite tells me he's either just being insulated from the truth or just in complete denial.
Here's what Mark Halperin says is really going on. Cut 13.
Biden Inc. has collapsed. All those Biden grandkids had a lavish lifestyle, which they very much liked. Hunter made hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars. Joe, as a former president, is not in a position to get the same kind of paid speeches, corporate boards, book deal. Biden Inc. needs a source of revenue. And Hunter does, even though he was pardoned, he's not going to prison. Hunter does not have great earning capacity.
So is it money that brought him out? Because it doesn't seem like it's enjoyable to him. I mean, it does seem like such a struggle. I watched the whole BBC interview, and, you know, the anchor was struggling. He was struggling. I'm saying to myself, he's not really enjoying it. I mean, I could watch the Nixon-Frost debates. Nixon, as much problem, as contentious as it was, he wanted to be there. I watched Joe Biden. I go, I can't picture this being pleasant for him.
Well, I mean, Hunter's earning power on paintings aside, there might be something to what Mark Halperin is saying. When you have a lot of people who have depended on you financially over the years, and then suddenly that dries up, that could be part of the motivation. I don't know. I feel like part of it is wanting to prove everybody wrong. He has these fits of where he feels very disrespected. He felt disrespected by President Obama, by much of, you know, the establishment, certainly by Nancy Pelosi. I mean, he feels, I think, that he wants to get out there and somehow vindicate his version of the story and vindicate himself and kind of, you know, do a rehab on his run and his term as president. But I don't know if it's also, you know, the former first lady, if it's the kids, I don't know. But I think a lot of us watch these interviews and they seem super painful. And we think if that was our loved one, we wouldn't want them doing that.
I wouldn't think so.
We want to protect them.
Yeah. I mean, so we'll see what emerges from this, because you got another hit book coming out from Jake Tapper and Alex Thompson. That's going to make things look worse. And if you look at Jill Biden, she says, well, no one was in the White House. Before we move on, I just want you to hear what she said about how she feels about these hit books. Cut 5.
Mr. President, since you left office, there have been a number of books that have come out deeply sourced from Democratic sources that claim in your final year there was a dramatic decline in your cognitive abilities in the final year of your presidency. What is your response to these allegations, or are these sources wrong?
They are wrong. There's nothing to sustain that. And so we went to work and we got it done. And, you know, one of the things
one of the things I think is that the people who wrote those books were not in the White House with us.
Right. And so they weren't in the White House. Ron Klain was, and the sources were.
Yes,
does she know
was.
How this works, Shannon?
Mm-hmm. I mean, exactly. When they are quoting people on the record who were with you at the closest levels in the White House, that pretty much gives the best access that you're possibly going to get behind the scenes. So it's one thing to say the author wasn't, but if everyone they talked to or some key people that they talked to were, then you do have accounts from inside and what was happening and what wasn't happening and who was part of, you know, essentially a cover-up.
So, Shannon, who do you have this weekend?
So we've got Secretary of Commerce Howard Lutnick, who is negotiating a lot of these trade deals as we track the talks with China this weekend. We've also got Senator Tom Cotton, the ranking member of Intel, to talk about Iran. Another round of talks is apparently happening on that this weekend as the president gets ready for his own Middle East trip this week.
So we see the UK deal get done. Instead of saying, OK, there's one, and the details are there. It looks pretty strong and both sides get something out of it. Listen to the media's reaction. Cut 18.
Hype we just heard from the president.
The answer to that is obviously not at all. I might have thought it was a trade deal on fertilizer because there was a bit of that.
This deal between the two countries is not actually going to be anywhat majorly significant.
I mean, it sounds like this is a marginal deal and that it's not that big of a deal.
Well, I mean, it's between two countries. It has 19% goes from when it comes to ethanol, 19% to zero. I'm pretty sure Iowa would love that. And the average export rate is was it 5%? Now on all products, it's 1.8%. Opportunities for benefits to the United Kingdom. Their tariffs on their cars, we're going to remove them because we don't really feel as though we can make Rolls-Royce cars. So we got about 100,000 to come here. They're going to remove tariffs on exports from 27% to 0% when it comes to steel and aluminum. So this is the type of deals the president wants to do, big and small. To me, this is the first, and I think it's an important one. It sets up a template for something down the line.
It does, but like President Trump has said, he could cure cancer, and there would be people like, this is terrible. How dare he? I just think there's a certain segment of the population that is never going to be happy about anything he does, even if it's good for our country. And they're going to want to look at these deals and say, oh, they were not that great of a deal. And he took us through this, you know, roller coaster of stuff with the markets and everything else. But if the worst of it, and who knows, but if the worst of it was, you know, 3 or 4 weeks of some instability in the markets, which have pretty much returned to their pre-Liberation Day levels, then I think a lot of Americans, if they feel like there is a payoff in the long term, they're going to be okay with it. But the pressure is on this administration to make that long-term payoff happen. And this one deal is a good start. If they could make real progress on China this weekend, that would be another great feather in their cap to be able to report out from those conversations.
Yeah, so President put on Truth Social, China should open up its market to the U.S. It would be good for them. Closed markets don't work anymore. And then he wrote, 80% tariff on China seems right. It's up to Scott B. And what he's saying is their tariffs are at 145% right now. The 21% of exports that were coming to us from them are now going fanned out all over Southeast Asia at discount rates in Central America. And we understand widespread reports that they're having problems with their factory staffing and getting paid. It looks like they might be willing to go down to as low as 60% in return, the U.S., in return for lifting the restrictions on rare earth that we need for electric cars and that we need for weapons. So we'll see how willing China is to deal. Mm-hmm. I know the markets would be pleased by this.
You would think so. And if there's any hint coming out of Switzerland that there is progress forward, I think that's only going to be yet another boost for the markets. But so many of these things are interconnected because there's been a lot of reporting that the Trump administration through Secretaries Bessent and Letnik and others have been putting pressure on other countries we're trying to get a deal done with to sort of cut China out of the mix. To say, listen, we'll give you a better deal if you agree to short circuit what you have going on with China. So that's at the same time we're going to be holding face-to-face talks with some of their top leaders. So does the Trump administration successfully rally other markets and other countries to sort of box China into a corner at a time when, you rightly point out, they are having their own economic problems? And we can't know the full extent right from outside, but the reports we're getting are that they are significant.
So lastly, The Joe Biden put a special dispensation for citizens who want to come here for asylum from Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. I think three, and Haiti. President says, I want to remove that. Every two different courts have said no, and now he wants the Supreme Court to rule on it. Do you think this should go in his favor?
We'll see. They've got this emergency request, as you said, at the Supreme Court. And what they're arguing is, listen, parole was never meant to be granted by these huge sweeping groups. That's just not what the law intended. It was supposed to be done on a much more individualized basis. And a lot of Americans could say, like, okay, well, let's look at individual claims and needs and, you know, fears and whatever it is. We want to be a country that welcomes people in genuine need and genuine danger. But it really, to me, gets to the bigger question that the Supreme Court's going to argue next week. They're going to hear these arguments over these nationwide injunctions. It's in the context of that birthright citizenship case. But really, all of these emergency cases pending at the Supreme Court are because a federal judge at the lowest level somewhere has put an entire nationwide program on hold. So the court's going to finally wade into that, I think, next week. And if they say, no, we don't think one of 600 or 700 judges somewhere across the country can stop an entire program on a nationwide basis, it's going to really slow down the ability in these efforts to go after the president in that way through the courts.
I thought it was an executive order. As an executive order, he issued it. As an executive order, you can't get rid of it. It just doesn't seem logical.
Well, because what's the point of an executive order? You can just go forum shop and find one judge during a Trump administration in San Francisco, during a Biden administration, maybe in Texas. I mean, if you can go find one judge to shut it down, and there have been numerous justices who've questioned whether that's really the way the system should be working, Gorsuch and Thomas, but also Kagan, who spoke out on this during the Biden administration. So we know of at least three justices that have real concerns about how it's working. And you get to five and, you know, you get a win for the executive branch.
Go get him, Shannon Bream. I look forward to Fox News Sunday all day and night on the channel and on the network.
And I'll see you Sunday night.
Absolutely. 10 o'clock. You want to know my guess?
I do.
Okay. You can't steal them. Steve, we have Stephen Miller. We have Douglas Murray. I need someone smarter than me. It's not easy to book to do that.
No,
we also have a great guest. Who am I forgetting, Allison? Zarna Garg, the fantastic comedian. Oh, and Charlie Kirk.
You're going to have a lot of fun on Sunday night. I'm going to tune in for that.
And I do this thing called walking. I walk around all night.
I want you to do the thing called dancing. You're always promising that there will be dancing on the show.
All right. You're right.
Let me know if that changes.
But can I correct a true journalist? I've never promised to dance.
Maybe not on the air, right. But it's your word against mine.
Well, I should trust you. And I'm going to go with Shannon Bream over my word. Shannon Bream, thanks so much.
See you Sunday.
All right.
Bye.
We're going to come back. I promise to take some calls. Then, or you can write me at briankilmeade.com. So don't forget, Sunday at 10, One Nation. Don't move.
Never met a dance floor that ever did me any good.
This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'm going to make this very simple for you, Dan. Men should not play sports against women. I'm not going to get into all the that's going on out here in the world today. You know, it's interesting. I always sit back and look at the stuff. And let me tell you something. I love gay people. I love transgender people. I'm against any form of discrimination, period. But men should not play sports against women. If anybody thinks that, I think they're stupid.
And that is Charles Barkley saying what he says best. And there was a hearing this week between that. Remember the fencer that took a knee rather than compete? She was testifying on Capitol Hill today. Riley Gaines got protested at the University of Washington. Remember the University of Pennsylvania swimmer, Outkick Coast, who was out there speaking out women's rights. Things have really turned positively for her. And evidently people just, they want to skip over it. This is what Democrats say, including Jason Crow, who was here. So I just bring when I bring up logical things like what Charles Barkley just said, answer the question. He says he's a Democrat. He says he doesn't vote for Trump. But when you ask him logical questions, he gives a reasonable answer, direct, as usual. That's exactly what Democrats should say. End of story. It's an 80-20, 97-3, whatever you want. But they won't say it. It rarely happens. Rarely happens. We just had a situation at Virginia where a girl that said she wanted to be a guy goes into a boys' locker room in high school, and the kids protest, and they get suspended. Because they felt uncomfortable. What's this girl who wants to be a guy getting naked for me when all the apparatus was female, if you're following me? So just straighten it out. I mean, the whole bathroom thing, you just put general lavatories. We solved that. But this is not going to solve itself. You just got to say, listen, you do your gender dysphoria. You should find out what's going on with it. See a therapist. You should always consult the parents. And when it comes to sports, I don't care what you're going through, how nice a person you are, you're not allowed to do it. And if the Olympics don't straighten it out, like USA Fencing will allow this. You know, boxing will still allow this. And we're going to be dealing with this in Los Angeles at the Olympics next. I'll talk about the Pope, Gianna Caldwell, next.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
An exciting day for Catholics and for America. We have a new pope. And against all odds, he is one of us, an American pope. The Popemobile is now a Ford F-250 with truck nuts.
The new pope actually graduated from Villanova University. It's wild that we have a pope who might have done a keg stand outside an Eagles game. Isn't that wild? Might have.
It's not just that Leo is an American. He was born in Chicago. Yeah. This means officially I can no longer imitate the Pope using an Italian accent. From now on, the Pope's going to sound like this. Hey there, it's your buddy Leo. The deep dish papa. Just talk to God, and not even he can help the White Sox. Sorry. First order of business, I will be canonizing Michael Jordan. Now, let's end by saying, da, prayers.
Pretty funny. That is a little of some of the remarks from the stunning news that the Pope is American, even though he spent considerable time in Peru, born in Chicago, went to Villanova, cardinal for 2 years, and now he's Pope. Giano Caldwell, Fox News political analyst, he's going to his brother's featured on America's Most Wanted in terms of trying to find his murderer. It's going to be airing on Fox TV on Monday. But Giano, first the fun stuff, a Pope from Chicago. Who would have thought?
Yeah, I wouldn't have saw that on my bingo card for 2025 at all. But certainly this is going to be different. And I guess when Donald Trump said America first, this is what he meant.
Do you think Trump deserves credit for this?
No, I don't. I'm making a joke.
Right. But I mean, it's pretty big. I mean, what is it like in Chicago? Do they take pride in this?
No. Yeah, of course. I think anywhere around the country, people are taking pride that not only he's from Chicago, but he's an American. So, this is something that I think many folks would see, maybe a little bit of American values seeping into the Catholic Church. I'm told from what I've at least read that he's more of a conservative in terms of his theology, which I hope is the case, because it seemed like the Catholic Church through the last pope kind of took a left turn there. So maybe things would be back on track and more about Bible than it is about some of these social movements.
Yeah, I do know, too, Pope Leo doesn't seem to be a big Trump fan. He retweeted some negativity towards Trump and told, I guess, on one occasion that the vice president was wrong about how something he posted. So I don't know. It's kind of interesting. I did not know cardinals were tweeting or taking on people. I could see posting, but I didn't think sparring. This is just, it could be a new age.
No, and I mean, it's been a new age. Since Trump went down that escalator, things in 2015, things have certainly been changed, and it's kind of upside down how people respond to politics these days. That's not something I would want my Pope necessarily doing. I wouldn't want people getting involved in political discussions, or even as a priest, I wouldn't want that. It should be about love. It should be about charity. It should be about faith in God, faith in Christ. Those are some of the measurements, biblical, that I would rather see them doing. But here we go. Let's see if with his new platform, if he changes his tune.
Right. Let's see what happens. I also think it's interesting that the Cubs tried to take ownership of him, but he's a White Sox fan. That's a big deal. There's a big difference, right?
Very big. In the city of Chicago, it is a major difference. People oftentimes don't know it, but since both teams often lose, it's just like, okay, I'm a Chicagoan. I'll support whatever Chicago team wins.
Okay. So, Giano, let's talk about what America's Most Wanted. They're going to feature... They're going to feature the crime that took your brother's life, and yes, they're going to try to find out who this killer is. Could you tell me about it?
Yes. On June 24th, 2022, my life changed forever when my innocent teenage baby brother Christian was murdered in Chicago on the South Side. And I'm honored that John Walsh and Callahan, his son, have taken on this case, because John Walsh is a crime fighter. He's a crime fighter's crime fighter. He's brought over 1,200 fugitives, got them arrested, taking them off the streets. This is somebody who has a major light that has been going on for decades that has often solved cases. So with the kind of visibility that I'll get from America's Most Wanted and homes across the country, of course, on Fox this coming, Fox Local this coming Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Check your local listings for where it may air in your city. I feel a bit of hope that we can get this thing solved. I feel hope that we have a Trump administration with people like Pam Bondi and Kash Patel, who I've recently, Pam Bondi, when I started the Caldwell Institute for Public Safety last year, which we're going after George Soros back and funded prosecutors, go to CaldwellInstitute.org and support our efforts there. But Pam was one of the first people that joined my advisory board during that time. Now she's attorney general. So I got that voice, too. So we got those resources. So we're putting this all together and hoping that my family receives justice for an injustice that happened back in June 24th, 2022. We need to see something happen here.
Well, let me ask you, do you have some solid leads? Do you have directions that you didn't have maybe 6 months ago or even 2 months ago?
No, not that we didn't have 6 months ago or 2 months ago. So this is going to be a fairly new process for us. What we do know, though, is there was an individual who was found with the gun on him, the murder weapon on him. He was arrested. The FBI got involved maybe 1 or 2 months after that. And apparently they wanted him for other things as well. But at that point, we were looking to get them to look at my brother's case. No one at the FBI will call me back. I called them multiple times. They wouldn't call me back. I got on television and said, hey, I want somebody to call me. I had FBI agents, former ones called current ones, still no callbacks. It wasn't until I went to Congress. I literally had to lobby multiple committee chairmen in Congress to get them to write a letter to the FBI director asking them to get involved. And when that happened, I got a call from the special agent in charge of the Chicago field office telling me he was on it. We were having regular calls. They put together a team, but this guy got promoted and he went on and the call stopped. So with this new administration in and this new moment of opportunity, this life from John Walsh and America's Most Wanted team, I'm hopeful that we can get the momentum and movement going again.
Here's a cut from America's Most Wanted, cut 53.
Christian Beeman was a high school senior with dreams of college and a bright future ahead of him. But in an instant, it was gone. The 18-year-old was outside a house after a party around 2 a.m. when a black SUV pulled up. Gunmen jumped out and opened fire. 50 shots rang out. Two people were wounded, but Christian was hit multiple times and died at the scene.
Wow, so that's a little of what's going to air on America's Most Wanted. It'll be Monday, this Monday coming up at 9 o'clock. So it was clearly Giano targeted, correct? Or is he they just looking to kill?
No, so he wasn't the target. So one of the theories we've heard, and I've talked to the police and they said they heard it as well, is there was a fight between two individuals months prior. Somebody recorded the fight, put it on Facebook. The guy who got beat up pretty badly from this two-man fight was after the guy who put the video on Facebook. They took they tried to kill the guy who put the video on Facebook. He runs off to Los Angeles, comes back 6 months later thinking the coast is clear. They see him out. Apparently my brother's standing next to him and other people, and they want to kill this particular guy, but they shoot everyone.
Understood. Here's a little more, cut 54.
Christian Beeman's murder made national news. But for Giano Caldwell, this wasn't just a headline.
If I wasn't on national television, people probably wouldn't care.
My family has forever been shattered, and so many families across the United States are dealing with very similar tragedies. It is time for us to speak out and hold criminals accountable to ensure that Christian's legacy means something.
So, are you happy with the way the piece came out?
I haven't seen the piece. Actually, the audio you just ran for me was the first I heard of it. So thank you for sharing that. But I'm pretty sure that the caliber and character and integrity of the show, the integrity of John Walsh, the integrity of Callahan, it will be superb, and they will cover this with everything they have. John Walsh has become a friend of mine. I love him. I consider him a big brother and a mentor in this space. And he's someone who's been extraordinarily helpful to me. I had an event at Mar-a-Lago back in February. It was our first event for the Caldwell Institute for Public Safety, again, at caldwellinstitute.org. He was our keynote speaker. We had hundreds of people in the big ballroom, Trump's big ballroom in Mar-a-Lago. And I was very grateful that he was able to come out, bring his talents, and talk to people who are interested in justice, who are interested in fighting back against these progressives who are endangering the lives of everyone within their jurisdictions. These George Soros-funded progressive district attorneys are creating harm for families all over the country. My family paid the price. I'm hopeful that our efforts at the Caldwell Institute for Public Safety ensures that other families don't have to pay that same price.
All right, so it's America's Most Wanted. See it Monday, and it's going to air after that on Fox Nation, Monday at 9 o'clock Eastern time. On a much lesser note, politics, just want to get your take on Joe Biden, his view of why Kamala Harris lost, and really is his view on America, I guess. Cut three.
Why do you think the vice president lost, and were you surprised?
I wasn't surprised, not because I didn't think the vice president was the most qualified person to be president, and she is. Well, I wasn't surprised because they went the route of the sexist route, all the whole route. I mean, this is a woman, she's this, she's that. I mean, it really, I've never seen quite as successful and a consistent campaign undercutting the notion that a woman couldn't lead the country and a woman of mixed race.
Do you think the fact that she's a woman of mixed race and a woman is the reason she lost?
No, but that's not the reason. But them playing on that is a part of the reason why people can disqualify her candidacy. The reason she lost is because she was a vice president that didn't do her job.
That's
it.
She
was the border czar. Immigration was the major issue in the country for everyone, not just conservatives, but Democrats, independents. Everyone believed that this was a major issue. The other issue was the economy. She got on that same view, set and said, I wouldn't do anything different than Joe Biden. She said Bidenomics was working. She said that all the failed policies that Joe Biden either ran on or tried to implement as president was superb. That's why she lost. People were in fear for crime. They were in economic uncertainty. The immigration issue was a major, major factor. Biological men or boys in women's sports, that was another issue. And Donald Trump talked about the issues from a real place. Even though the mainstream media didn't like it, it resonated with Americans all over the country. That is the reason she lost. It has nothing to do with her mixed race. It has nothing to do with her being a woman.
It just, to me, it damages the whole thing. And if you really view our country as somebody who's unwilling to elect a woman or a woman of color, why don't say that you have pride in America, because you don't. You can't have it both ways. Gianno, so glad you're telling the story. I hope you get some answers with the power of this show and then Fox Nation after. I assume this is your best chance yet to find out who was really responsible.
Well, thank you so much. And I encourage the listeners and audience to follow me at Gianno Caldwell on social media. And again, check out CaldwellInstitute.org. We got to keep the work going. It started with my brother, but it doesn't end with him. There's a lot of people out there that need support and help and the fight back against these George Soros-funded prosecutors. Right. Thank you, Brian.
All right, go get him, Gianno. Back in a moment.
Thank you so
much. It's Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
The Democrats are fighting it only because they want to fight. They have Trump derangement syndrome. Senator Schumer's become a Palestinian. Buttigieg, who has no clue. You know, he drives to work on his bicycle with his, in all fairness, with his husband on the back, which is a nice, loving relationship.
Well, he does. It must be frustrating for the president to get a trade deal to, you know, the economy's come back. The market's come back. 12 of the last 13 days has gone up. Then you see the fact that the China thing is starting to break, that they're beginning to accelerate talks at different areas. And the Democrats just want to point out, well, we got this guy, Kilmer Albego Garcia, who is a gang, who might be a gang member, but we sent him to the wrong country. So, I mean, they just want to fight everywhere. And by the way, Chuck Schumer, in the beginning, probably was going to fight him. But now, because he's so threatened with his spot, they argue about everything. So it is pure politics. I think it's interesting on China. The president came out with Truth Social post and just said, I might be looking to go down to 80% from 145%. But it's up to Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, and his trade rep, in order to see if there's some movement on China. If they come out and they're standoffish and they want to give a little speech about how bad America is, nothing's going to move. And maybe they are not having the strife that everybody's reporting, including Radio Asia, that they're having. Here's what Trump said yesterday. Cut 27.
Well, it could be. I mean, we're going to see. Right now, you can't get any higher. It's at 145, so we know it's coming down. I think we're going to have a very good relationship. You know, I always got along very well with President Xi. That relationship was greatly disturbed by COVID when COVID came in. But we get along very well now.
All right. And he just says, OK, let's see what happens. Now, the president going in with his not talking out after the inauguration. There has been some overtures made by the Chinese about, we know you're going to want to do this trade thing again. We know we never got past phase one, never implemented it, never lived up to what was agreed on before the pandemic, and you poisoned the world. So they did not respond. The Trump team just did not respond. They just got an ambassador this week. It's Senator Perdue is going to be Ambassador Perdue, and he's going over there. All right, fine. But now when you hit him hard, then you come back and say, yeah, he's a good guy. Does that really keep that? I keep thinking it keeps China off balance. Same thing with Vladimir Putin. Think about this. Vladimir Putin, CIA guy, prides himself on knowing his opponent. So they just say, well, Trump is pro-Russian, man. He's going to be in our corner. And Trump comes out, and they got the big fight in the Oval Office. And he goes, look, I told you, he's in our corner. And he's saying, I'm not taking sides. And even blurted out that maybe Ukraine started this thing. Look, I told you he's on our side. Now Trump comes out and goes, yeah, I think they're toying with us. I think they're dragging us along. J.D. Vance came out and says, they're asking for way too much. And all of a sudden, Mr. KJB says, well, maybe we don't have him in our pocket. Maybe he's a little bit different. And then Iran, the guy that killed Soleimani, says, hey, you know, I don't want to blow you up. Let's talk about this. Rather not. Let's make you a great country. Wait a second. Are you the guy that killed Soleimani or not? You know, so it's interesting. He prides himself on being unpredictable. And maybe if you want to profile him with your best espionage, your most prodigious espionage talent, you still might come up a little bit short because Trump's kind of shooting from the hip a lot. Here's cut 28.
I think people like to say, yes, we're having a meeting to meet. Well, we're meeting. So what are we going to do? Talk about meeting again? I think it's going to be substantive. I think we can say that, right, Scott? Very substantive. Now, China wants to do something. And look, they have to at this point. You know, essentially, they made $1 trillion a year. And now they have absolutely, you know, no business because of the tariffs. They have no business, and they want to have business. And we want them to have business. We want them to do well.
Here's what...
We want them to do very well. So I think it's going to be very substantive.
Right, I do too. And I think there's a couple of things going on here. They're looking for real results and to lift restrictions. They want to lift restrictions on some of the rare earth stuff that we need, like magnets. And in turn, the Chinese want us to lift restrictions on certain chips that they need for AI. I don't think we're going to do that. If that was there, whether we have a deal or not, it just doesn't work to our benefit. So China is taking a lot of the material that we are buying, a lot of the equipment, a lot of the stuff on barges, and they're sending it to Southeast Asia and Latin America. That is really 21% of their output that comes to us. We're not buying it. So they're sending it there, but they're coming at huge discounts, and that makes a lot of these workers upset. Make sure you watch One Nation. I want you to watch One Nation Sunday at 10 o'clock. We have Stephen Miller's going to be with us, but we have Douglas Murray and so much more.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.